Bibles, turn to James chapter 5, and we're talking about faith helps us to overcome annoying noises at the beginning of a sermon. James chapter 5, we're going to talk about overcoming discouragement with patience. Very thankful for those that have come from different places to be with us, and I know that's an encouragement to the good brethren here, and it's an encouragement to me. And also want to say I appreciate the opportunity to be with the good church here and pray the Lord's richest blessings be upon you. You have good members here, good talent. I think it's good that someone was telling me there's 9 different men here that can present lessons. I know a friend of mine preaches out in Texas. When he goes out of town, it's quite an ordeal just to find someone in the congregation to preach. And you have visitors that come here, and so you have a lot of good opportunities here. And pray the Lord will be with you as you grow together or strive together for the faith of the gospel. And I appreciate your hospitality very much and your kindness to me. Since you were nice to me, I decided to stay the whole week. And I enjoyed getting to meet you. And it's always good to know that we have brethren all over the country that love the Lord and want to do what is right. This lesson, I think, is a practical lesson about faith can patiently help us to overcome discouragement. James chapter 5, verse 8, be patient and strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is near. When he talks about being patient, the word here, he's talking about different, really, challenging situations that the brethren here in the book of James, these Jewish Christians, had to face. In your outline, I mentioned some of these. They were oppressed from rich Jews. They were grumbling about each other. They were tempted not to tell the truth. They were discouraged about their suffering and weakness. And they had members falling away. So they faced some challenges. But the great thing that we learn from studying James 5 is that whatever problem that we have, one thing I know is problems will end. There's no problem if you have faith in God and you put your faith into practice. There's no problem that we cannot outlast by patient reliance on God. And in fact, we ought to see that these challenges that we have can be something that can draw us closer to God. So discouragement in this world is inevitable. In a sinful world, there's problems all in the world. Story told of this fellow that was marooned on a desert island, and the ship came by and he was going to be rescued, and the captain said, well, you better send him the news, let him read a newspaper and let him ask you if he wants to be rescued or not. Because there are problems in the world. But our response is optional. And you know, a lot of people are not defeated so much as they just simply quit. You're not beaten until you quit. And what faith helps us to do is that we see a purpose, even in our discouragement or our suffering, that is an opportunity for faith to overcome. So the main point we want to drive home is that faith in a compassionate God empowers us to patient endurance to overcome discouragement. We've all been discouraged by different things at different times. So the question is not, will I ever face discouragement? The question is, what am I going to do about it when I face discouragement? And that's where we put patient faith into action. The first point he deals with in verses 1 through 6 has to do, I think, it's a unique section in Scripture. It is verses that are addressed to people who are not present. It is a prophetic denunciation of the oppressive rich that was taking advantage of the Jewish Christians or poor Jewish Christians. Look at verses 1 through 6. Come now, you rich, and weep and howl for your miseries which are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted and your garments have become moth-eaten. Your gold and your silver have rusted and their rust will be a witness against you and will consume your flesh like fire. In the last days that you have stored up your treasure, behold, the pay of the laborers who mowed your fields, which has been withheld by you. The law of Moses said in Leviticus 19 in verse 13 that you're not to keep the pay of a day laborer overnight. In other words, at the end of the day, you're supposed to pay them. That's fair and just. Well, yet these rich people, they would just hold the money back. Why? Well, because they could. And it's kind of like, you know, what are you going to do about it if I don't pay you? If you're rich and powerful, a lot of times you can push people around. But notice this cry of justice. The pay of the laborers who mowed your fields, verse 4 cries out against you. That is, cries out to God for justice. And the outcry of those who did the harvesting has reached the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. And that is a Hebrew designation. The Lord of hosts. The Lord of armies. The Lord who sits in heaven. Who has unlimited power to enforce justice. He says, you have lived luxuriously on the earth and led a life of wanton pleasure. You have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter. You have condemned and put to death the righteous man, the righteous one. And that could be a reference to Christ. You put to death the righteous one, Jesus Christ. And he does not resist you. You remember Jesus was led as a sheep to the slaughter and he did not open his mouth as Isaiah tells us. Verse 7, therefore be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. What is this section here, verses 1 through 6? It is just like the prophetic denunciations of the book of Amos and Isaiah and other prophetic diatribes that was against a certain class of wicked people to encourage God's people that God saw wickedness or oppression or injustice and that God was not blind to that. God is in heaven and he sees everything that happens. So you have this prophetic denunciation to encourage the downtrodden faithful that God sees and knows everything the people do and God is going to hold them accountable. Justice, the wheels of justice may move slowly, but they do move inevitably. And a lot of times we'll say, oh, they get away with this. People will talk about in a certain election, they stole an election. Or the people who are rich and powerful, they got away with this. Or this fellow that was able to hire a very expensive lawyer and say, he got away with murder. Nobody gets away with anything as far as God is concerned. The God of all the earth will hold every person accountable, regardless of how much money they have, how much power or influence they have, that everyone is going to be brought to account at the judgment seat of God. And that should be an encouragement to us because sometimes we get discouraged. If somebody seems like they get away with things, like they get a promotion and it's unfair and I should have gotten a promotion, or someone will cheat me or hurt me in some way, and I feel like I'm trying to do what is right, and yet sometimes I'm suffering, or this person who seems to be written, the prosperity of the wicked is a vexing question in the Bible, in the Old Testament, in the New Testament. Why does God allow them to do that? Well, the reason that God allows that, he allows free will. And so we have to patiently endure that, that life is not for our comfort and pleasure, but life is a test, and life is to refine our faith. So I need to trust in God. There is value in waiting and where we learn dependence upon God. And when he says everything is going to be burned up or there's going to be a judgment day, Christians by faith can see that every physical thing will rot and every person will die. So no physical thing is permanent. And that's what patient faith helps us to do. In the short term, we may be pessimists. Things may be bad in the short term. But Christians by faith can be optimists in the long term. In the long term, God has guaranteed justice, that he will right all wrongs. So someone may have a short-term advantage, but I don't have to worry about that. I can trust that God will take care of that in the end. So he says in verses 7 and following, they need to wait patiently for God's promised deliverance. Therefore be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. The farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it until it gets the early and the late rains. That's in Palestine. You'd have the spring and the fall rains. You too, be patient. The word there, patient, there's two words a lot of times translated in the New Testament. One of them means endurance or perseverance, supomone. This is macrothumia. Macro means large. Thumos means temper. Means to be long-tempered. Don't fly off the handle. Don't get easily upset. It is the ability to be patient and to be calm and collected. Because I see things from God's perspective. The world is not a slippery bar of soap in the hand of God. God has everything in control. God sees and knows everything. God has a plan in history. And God is going to bring history to its assigned end. And everyone be held account. Now, when he talks about the coming of the Lord is near, and he says, verse 9, the judge is standing right at the door. The coming of the Lord is near or at hand. And, you know, the Lord has not returned in 2,000 years since James was written. I think it's particularly applicable to Jewish Christians that James wrote to. I think he's talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. That Jesus had prophesied, if you look in Luke chapter 21, that within that generation, that would be before 70 A.D., that Jerusalem would be destroyed as a judgment on the Jews for rejecting the Messiah. Now, I'm reading from Luke chapter 21. Luke chapter 21, verse 28. I want to start with verse 28. And this correlates to James 5 about being patient or encouraged. When these things begin to take place, straighten up and lift up your heads because your redemption is drawing near. Verse 32, truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. So within that generation, everything that he talks about in the previous verses is going to take place. And what is he talking about? The destruction of Jerusalem. And that would be a deliverance for the Jewish Christians who are being persecuted by the rich Jews and the religious Jews that would treat the Christian Jews as a religious minority. And what we see here in this text, verse 20, it says, verse 19, by your endurance or your patience you will gain your lives. But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, and that happened in 70 A.D., then recognize that her desolation is near. Then those who are in Judea must flee to the mountains, and those who are in the midst of the city must leave, and those who are in the country must not enter the city. And Eusebius tells us in his church history that no Christian Jews died in the besieging of Jerusalem. That is, they heeded the words of Jesus and they fled to the city of Pella, which is northeast of Jerusalem across the Jordan River. Because the rebellion began in Galilee. Josephus was the Galilean commander in 66 A.D. And then the Romans worked their way down into Judea. So the Christians knew what were coming and they fled and no one perished. Verse 22, because these are the days of vengeance, so that all things which are written will be fulfilled. Verse 24, he's talking about the Jews, and they will fall by the edge of the sword, and will be led captive into all the nations, and Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. Verse 25, there will be signs in the sun and moon and stars, and on the earth dismay among nations, and in perplexity at the roaring of the sea and the waves, men fainting from fear, and the expectation of the things which are coming upon the world for the powers of the heavens will be shaken. In other words, this is apocalyptic imagery taking from Isaiah and the Old Testament that you're having a cataclysmic worldwide upheaval. We say, oh, my life is over. This is the end of the world. I don't mean it literally. I just mean it's a very cataclysmic upheaval. That's apocalyptic symbolic language. Verse 27, when they see the Son of Man coming in a cloud, that's a cloud of judgment. When you see a storm cloud, you know a storm is coming. And this is apocalyptic imagery from Isaiah 13. God coming on a cloud in judgment, a storm cloud of judgment with power and great glory. And then to go back, verse 28, straighten up, your redemption is at hand. And he says, verse 32, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Josephus in the Jewish Wars talked about the Romans tortured, confiscated things from the rich Jews as well as the other Jews. They sold, I believe it was 92,000 Jews were sold into slavery. Thousands of Jews were crucified. They crucified Jews leading out of the road out of Jerusalem until they ran out of wood. Jesus said these are the days of vengeance. So there were, James, if it was written, you know, in the late 40s, early 50s A.D., they had to wait about 15 or so years. But there was finally deliverance or relief to these Jewish Christians. The point is that God fulfills His promise. God is never late. God is always on time. So He said, strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is near. And we need to remember, in having to deal with these difficulties, what is hard to bear can be sweet to remember when we look back in dealing with the difficulty. Strengthen your hearts. It's an opportunity. I need to see all problems as an opportunity to draw closer to God. Today I'm happy. A difficult challenge in my life today ended. Some of you I've told that I went over to Indiana and I closed on my house. I preached over in Indiana. Had it on the market for a year and a half. Having two house payments for over a year is no fun. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody. What was challenging is this house in Indiana had three contracts on the house fall through. And this economy is terrible. And in fact, I just barely, we were supposed to close at 1 o'clock, and the only thing was we had a radon test done. The EPA says it needs to be under 4. First radon test came back at 6.9. You know, if the radon test does not work, we don't sell the house. Well, this would be contract number 4 that's falling through. The guy goes and he does something, he mitigates it. It comes back at 5.9. The third time, I haven't heard back from him. I go over there, I don't know if it's passed or not. It came in at 3. We squeaked through. Thank God. The idea that God, what this has taught me the last year and a half, when you're just kind of keeping your nose above water financially, my wife and I have prayed more than we ever had about any particular thing. I mean, this has been kind of an emotional roller coaster. So it's helped us learn to pray with one another more. Also, it's helped to teach our kids the value of money. You know, before when you have money, your kids want to buy things, but you say, well, we can't buy anything until we sell the house. So it's helped to teach them the value of money. They probably wouldn't admit that, but I think it has. They've been, they understand that, money doesn't grow on trees. There was this young couple, they got married, and the wife got in trouble. She wrote some checks that bounced. And she said, well, I thought as long as I had checks in the checkbooks that we had money. No, you had to have money in the bank. And so all of that is that we, and every one of us here, face discouraging challenges that wear us down. And whatever problem, whether it's a year or two or three or four or five or 20 or 50, whatever it is, they will eventually all end one way or another. Now I want you to look at the next point here, that faith, patient faith comes with discouraging challenges. He says, in this challenge, when they're facing persecution from these Jews, one thing they had to do, they had to be patient with one another. Look at verse 9. Do not complain or groan, brethren, against one another, so that you yourselves may not be judged or condemned. Behold, the judge is standing right at the door. In other words, judgment is poised on the Jewish nation that rejected Jesus. God will judge sinners. Well, when you're under stress and discouraged, what happens? It's really easy for us to gripe and complain about one another. We kind of get on each other's nerves. You know, it's kind of like if you've ever been on a trip, if you've been a cross-country trip in a van or a car or something like that, and you're cooped up together, and you're sort of restricted, and you sort of get on each other's nerves after a while. And so when we're facing difficulty, what Christians do not need to do is they don't need to turn on one another. Our brethren are not the enemy. The enemy should be out there, the devil. I know the devil can get in the church, but the point is that if you believe in the Lord, you want to do what's right, you need to be, the devil would like for us to turn on one another. He says, do not complain or groan. You know, we all have different annoying traits. We just have to learn to put up with them. I would like people to be as patient with me. I need to be as patient with others as I would like them to be with me. Like, there's a friend of mine that he's a preacher, and I hadn't heard him preach in a long time. But when I was going to college, he would preach, and he had this interesting mannerism. When he would make a point, he would go like that. He'd be talking. I don't know why he did that. If that was sort of pause, or well, after a while, you see a fellow preaching, and he's sticking his tongue out. That can get annoying. And we had a song leader in another church where I attended. And he used to drive my wife crazy. You know what he'd do? He would have about $5 worth of quarters in his pocket, and he would rattle it. He would just like to rattle his change in front of me. My wife just said, man, it just got on her nerves. Just, could he please stop that? We all do annoying things. He says that we need to be patient with one another. Now, sometimes it may be good just to tell someone. Maybe we're not aware of some of the stuff that we are doing. And we have a sister in a congregation where I preached. She didn't have a lot of tact, but at least she would say what was on her mind. And if you notice, I have a new hearing aid, but before I had my hearing aid, I'm deaf in my left ear. If you can't hear in your left ear, you tend to...